I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. President Donald Trump has had a rather contentious relationship with the press even before he became president. There has always been a level of antagonism between presidents and the media, and some would argue that it's reached new heights under the current administration. This hour of the program, we're going to be looking at Donald Trump's relationship with the press and its implications for the public. We have a lot to talk about. He has been getting around the media when he doesn't really like the coverage, so he refers to his Twitter account, which may be a step to control news coverage. He just goes straight to the American public. There is a preference for favorable outlets, excluding others. Rex Tillerson invited Fox News to cover his meeting at the Korean demilitarized zone, but denied access to the press pool that provides all media outlets with an account of the secretary's activities. There have been very conservative, kind of fringe news organizations invited to the White House. There have been mainstream outlets that have been barred from certain press conference meetings. And we're going to be talking about all of this and what the relationship should be between a presidential administration and the press. We're going to have two guests with us. Hadas Gold is political media reporter, and Mark Pitch, an assistant city editor at the Wisconsin State Journal, president of the Madison chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists and member of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, a group that is dedicated to open government. They recently sent a letter right before President Trump was inaugurated, asking for him to deal with the press in a certain way. They've also had issues with President Obama, who wasn't completely forthcoming with the press. But we have a whole new territory that we're dealing with now. We'll be welcoming phone calls for both our guests. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. To set up the show, this is the president talking about the press in February, and here's what he had to say at that time.
The media is trying to attack our administration because they know we are following through on pledges that we made, and they're not happy about it for whatever reason. And, you know, you can talk all you want about Russia, which was all a, you know, fake news fabricated deal to try and make up for the loss of the Democrats, and the press plays right into it.
Let's introduce Hadas. Hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. Hello.
Appreciate it, Kathleen. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, our pleasure. Mark, let's start with you. You and many other journalism organizations and open government organizations all over the country asked for a meeting with the president or the vice president to the Society of Professional Journalists to establish a relationship with the current administration and to try and be to get the administration to be open about having an open government so that you had access to people you wanted to talk to. And what was the response?
The administration hasn't responded.
What did you ask from them?
And again, this was the Society of Professional Journalists national organization, and dozens of other media and government transparency groups sending this letter. They wanted the president to affirm his commitment to the First Amendment. They wanted him to commit to ensuring that the Washington Press Corps and others, other members of the press corps who are covering him as he holds rallies and meetings and events outside of Washington, access to those events and activities, and to allow government employees who are experts in a particular subject to talk to the media rather than to have that information be distributed by public relations folks and spokesmen and spokeswomen instead of the actual experts, which is sort of a trend that we've seen not only in the federal government but in state and local governments as well.
Mm-hmm. And you also had a somewhat difficult relationship. There have always been difficult relationships between the president and the press, but you also asked for a meeting with President Obama. I believe your organization met with Josh Earnest. You were concerned about an open relationship with that administration as well. What are the differences between administrations?
Well, you know, I think as you mentioned in your opening, what we've seen here is sort of this unprecedented sort of distrust or hostility toward the media under this current administration. President Obama came in saying he was going to run the most transparent administration in history, and that was simply didn't prove to be the case. You know, SBJ and many of these same media groups and government transparency groups, you know, sought a meeting, as you said, with Josh Earnest, and nobody was really satisfied. You know, the Obama administration, we recently learned, he spent $36 million trying to keep documents from the public last year. But, you know, the Obama administration, the Bush administration before him, all the other presidents didn't have advisors referring to the press as the opposition party. The president didn't call those of us in the media enemy of the people. They didn't refer to stories or programs or commentary that they didn't like as fake news. They didn't have advisors who came up with quote-unquote alternative facts that were used to try and discredit actual facts. So the difference is this unprecedented sort of level of hostility toward the media, which is really trying, I think, to undermine the kind of things that the media does, which is provide news and information for public consumption.
Mm-hmm. There's also great concern, Hadas, and Politico, I know, wrote a long piece about this recently, concern about where the president gets his information. A lot of people have been saying that he really has a voracious consumption of conservative media. He watches Fox News all the time. He looks at Breitbart. He is a big believer in conspiracy theories, and so he may have seen something on Fox which finds its way into the press conference, which finds its way into what he says is a matter of fact. And some of this is very serious, and wiretapping, a charge of wiretapping by the previous administration on Donald Trump Tower, and all of that is shown to be completely erroneous. But he's picking up these nuggets of information from where, maybe you can tell me, and then bringing them to the American people in his version of fact via a tweet. It kind of throws the truth up in the air. This is hard.
Yeah, it's sort of fascinating that you have a president who has access to every intelligence agency and all of the smartest people in the government who probably know a lot more than the reporters that he's watching, but he still can't break this habit of just being absolutely obsessed with coverage of himself and getting a lot of his information from the media and from television. I mean, when he was asked during the campaign, for example, who are you getting your advice from on issues of national security or military issues? And he said specifically, you know, I watch the shows. I watch people on the shows. I can tell you a little bit about his daily media diet. We know that he wakes up early and he watches a lot of the morning shows, and some of those that he doesn't watch in the morning, he records. He used to be a big consumer of Morning Joe, and it's been said that he has stopped watching it as much. He watches a lot of Fox and Friends in the morning, which out of the cable morning shows is the most pro-Trump. And then throughout the day, he's pretty busy, but he does get a stack of materials, printed out articles. He also reads the print versions of the New York Times, New York Post, Washington Post. So that's at least somebody who's advocating still for the old school print versions of the newspapers. And he also gets these printouts of website articles, including from websites that probably would have never found their way to the desk of the president in previous administrations, both Republicans and Democrats, such as Breitbart, which is what's been cited as perhaps one of the reasons for this wiretapping claim. There was a Breitbart article that landed on his desk in this pile. And then at night, he is known to turn on cable and be watching a lot of these shows, and we see that in how he responds to them pretty quickly on Twitter, and it is really stunning that he is consuming that much television. I mean, I think for most people, that would be a lot to consume in addition to our jobs, but he seems to have an insatiable appetite for this, for coverage of himself and how he's being portrayed in the media.
Mm-hmm. Douglas Brinkley, the presidential historian, has written about all of this, writing that Donald Trump, like millions of Americans, is susceptible to conspiracy theories. But when you pick up some of this information, like Barack Obama was born in Kenya, not in the United States, and then this whole, the former president was wiretapping you, and he got the British intelligence agency to wiretap as well. Brinkley says that we've never seen a president operate like this, and the long-term damage is you're going to just get ravaged in history. Mark, what's your response to that?
I don't know what historians are going to look like or look at this this period and say, but one thing that is interesting is that there is some of the biggest critiques of the way the president is sort of using the bully pulpit and what he's talking about in terms of the media have been members of the conservative media, whether they're independent columnists or they work for the National Review or the Weekly Standard. You all may have seen the Wall Street Journal editorial in this morning's paper posted yesterday about the president's credibility, raising real questions about his relationship with the truth, his use of conspiracy theories, and so forth. So, in the end, Brinkley may end up being right. That may be too early to say, though.
He does have this, and I wonder if anybody has a handle on how many people are reading his tweets. He can really bypass all news organizations and go directly to the people, and all of those tweets are reported on by the mainstream press. Who needs the press? Hottis?
Right. He talks a lot about how he has more than 20 million, if not more, followers on social media. And however, I do think that he does need the press, and at least he himself is pretty obsessed with the coverage, and I think he recognizes how important coverage was to his win. It's sort of ironic, they always talk about the opposition party, they talk about how they don't need the media, and yet they still talk to media reporters, to the reporters, they still have them in the briefing room. Donald Trump still does interviews. They might be, he might not be sitting down with CNN, but he's sitting down with Fox News, he's sitting down with local reporters. So there is this kind of public war, but then behind the scenes, it's still a functional relationship because they recognize that they still need the media.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Hadas, that we see that here at the local level, at the state level, as well. No matter how much somebody wants to complain about us, sort of publicly, there continues to be this sort of symbiotic relationship. You can't, and I think what the president can say that he's using Twitter and speaking directly to the people, but when he's saying things that are either not true or that can be easily debunked or whatever, the media is right there to write about that. Now, whether that makes a difference for folks who support the president or not, I guess is an open question. But politicians, whether they're on the local school board or city council or the governorship or work in Congress, some of them have long tried to dismiss us or manage us, and the simple truth of it is they can't. They just can't direct what we do and how we do it.
Right. I'm wondering long term what happens to his agenda in terms of healthcare or whatever other issues he wants to deal with. It would appear as though what's happened now is that there's a great deal of time spent on debunking some of what he said when it's come to wiretaps, when it's come to the size of the crowd at the inauguration, when it's come to all kinds of issues, that instead of having the president give a very serious discussion and explanation to the American people about healthcare reform, about what he considers to be concerns about immigration policies, etc. Instead, you have to be consumed with debunking what's been said by the president, and it really takes up a whole lot of time. Hottis?
Yeah, it does. It does take up a whole lot of time, and it's also, politically, I would say that for the White House, it might help them in terms of the narrative that the media is against them, but it's not. If what they're trying right now to do is to have policy wins, to get health care passed, to get a Supreme Court nominee confirmed, it's not very helpful when a lot of the time the media is then obsessed with what the president tweeted most recently, and the staff themselves don't know when the president is going to be tweeting. They've been very public about or open about how they see those tweets just like the rest of us. I mean, some of them are planned, but then those Saturday morning tweets, I mean, they don't necessarily know that they're coming either, and I'm sure that for a lot of them it would be better if they at least had a warning about it, because otherwise they spend the rest of their weeks, but then it kind of goes into this cycle where then they accuse the media of obsessing unnecessarily over these things that are, you know, and misconstruing them, and the number of times we have to watch Sean Spicer twist himself into these explanations. It is really a huge distraction from this very ambitious agenda that they've set out.
Right. So, Mark, how does a paper decide to deal with it? How much of the paper do you devote to policy on health care? How much of it do you devote to a wiretapping charge, which he's tweeted about many times, being discredited completely?
Well, I mean, the beauty of working at a newspaper, I guess, is that every day is a different day. And, you know, a lot of these stories have multiple parts, and whatever gets published on day one may not be the last word, and then there's always day two, three, and four. So when you're putting together a paper, you know, you're looking at the totality of things. I just came from our local our A1 news meeting a few minutes ago, and we've got a lot of things that are going on today. Some stories that might have made A1 in tomorrow's paper are going to get bumped back to our local page. So, you know, we deal with these things on a case-by-case basis. So, but to get to your, I guess, direct question, you know, we're trying to strike a balance. We don't necessarily feel like every time the president tweets something, we need to, we need to put it on the front page. But if he's accusing the past president of wiretapping him during the election, we think that's what front page worthy. When the FBI director comes out and says we have no evidence to show that, that's also front page news. So, again, you got to deal with it on a case by case basis. But some of this stuff that's going on right now is just so extraordinary; it's hard not to keep it on the front page.
We welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the very difficult relationship between the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and the press. We have yet to talk about, well, the fact that he's decided to include Sean Spicer, that is, and the administration, certain outlets into the press briefings, and others not called on as much. The fact that the Secretary of State is, is going on this big trip to Asia, and there's one reporter, and that reporter is not feeding a pool of reporters as to what's being discussed, which is fairly important for that to happen. And we're discussing Donald Trump's use of Twitter, his attacks on the press. All of that is what we're discussing this hour of the program. Welcoming your phone calls. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guests are Hadas Gold, a media reporter for Politico, and Mark Pitch, who is an assistant city editor at the Wisconsin State Journal and president of the Madison chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. This is the Ideas Network. This hour, the current administration's relationship with the press. This is from a press conference in February.
I want to find a friendly reporter. Used to say it was John. Are you a friendly reporter? Watch how friendly he is. Wait, watch how friendly he is. Go ahead.
I've been good to you the entire campaign, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
There are people who are committing anti-Semitic acts or threatening to.
You see, he said he was going to ask a very simple, easy question. And it's not.
It's an important
question. It's not a simple question, not a fair question. Okay, sit down. I understand the rest of your question. See, he lied about he was going to get up and ask a very straight, simple question. So, it's welcome to the world of the media.
What about about the relationship between the president and individual reporters, picking on certain reporters? That reporter had a very legitimate and extremely important question to ask. It was an unusual response to that important issue. Hadas?
Yeah, I mean, he's been known for throughout the past 2 years since he's been running to pick out reporters individually, call them out by name, including at rallies, which actually led to some reporters needing Secret Service protection themselves, which was a little bit of a unique position to have the Secret Service, who are supposed to be protecting the candidate, also having to protect an individual because of the words of the candidate themselves. And this has continued to an extent throughout the, as Trump has taken over the presidency, and he's not calling out individual reporters necessarily as much anymore, unless they're, you know, bigger names like a Joe Scarborough or something like that. But what's interesting, and what I've heard from quite a few people, is that privately, when he does meet with reporters, including ones that he has tangled with before, he's gracious. He is totally fine with them. There have been some moments that they had actually a big luncheon before his big address to Congress a couple weeks ago, and they invited all the major anchors from all the major television networks, including places like CNN. Mm-hmm. And he was completely fine with them. From people that I've spoken to who were at that lunch, he did make some comments that were seemed kind of be a sleight of hand, perhaps towards CNN or something like that. But it's not like he refused to shake their hands and didn't sit down and talk to them. I mean, they were invited to the dinner or to the lunch just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. You think it would behoove, Mark, a president or a governor or whoever to have a decent relationship with the press, because they're going to be writing about you. You may as well make sure you get some good stories, huh?
Well, I think, you know, the important thing is, I think, sort of a respect and an understanding of
respect.
What, you know, each party does. And, you know, if journalists can treat the people that they cover with sort of dignity and respect and understand, you know, what it's like to be in the public eye, and to, you know, most of all, be fair and accurate, and then have the politician, you know, understand that we have a job to do, and it is to try and provide, you know, news and information in an unbiased and fair way, even if things get rough and tumble and contentious at times, that you can, you know, at the end of the day, you know, have that sort of mutual respect. And like I said, you know, whether it's a school superintendent or a, you know, a city council person or a governor, you know, somebody's always going to try and manage us and try and sort of steer us to do things in the way that they want us to do. And it's just, you know, it's hard to control the media. You just can't do it, no matter how much they really want to try.
Mm-hmm. We've read reports that the makeup of the press briefing room, Sean Spicer's daily press briefings are almost daily, has changed under this administration. Is that true or not?
Well, it has sort of, but with every president, there are different outlets who come in and start reporting from there. What's changed and what's been unique is who Sean Spicer calls on in his briefings, and also some of the people who are there. Like you said, we've seen some websites that some people call conspiracy websites, such as Gateway Pundit, who are now in the briefing room every day. I mean, for years, there have always been people who are from some fringe websites who are allowed to go to the briefings every day, and there are some people who have been known to be there for many years who it's not sure exactly where they write for, but usually they're for more self-professed, you know, news websites, less so websites that have been known to proffer conspiracy theories about Obama or about Hillary Clinton. What's also interesting is Sean Spicer is who he calls on. And traditionally, the first two rows of the briefing room, and the seats are determined by the White House Correspondents Association, so the first two rows are the major networks and the television wires and the major newspapers. And then it kind of goes back from there to the lesser known outlets. What we've seen is that Sean Spicer has kind of bucked tradition, and instead of calling on those first two rows as often, he really opens it up. They've instituted these Skype seats, video calls from some local reporters and some talk radio shows, And he also calls on other lesser-known outlets who don't even have seats in the briefing room. I've actually heard from reporters in the White House that they're not opposed to this change in strategy and calling on a variety of outlets. I've actually heard some really positive remarks about some of the Skype questions, especially the ones that come from local outlets and not necessarily the talk radio ones that tend to be a little bit more biased, but the local outlet ones ask some really interesting questions that affect their communities that can elicit some responses that the national reporters might not know to ask. So it's been a change and not necessarily a negative one.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls. We start with Sam in Milwaukee. Hi, Sam.
Hi. My question's for, I guess, for both of your guests, actually. You know, with how reporters are having to deal with covering, you know, these lies and falsehoods and stuff, do they feel that they have to walk a fine line to stay in that room to be able to report on Trump and his administration, you know, not to step on any toes, to possibly be kicked out of the position where they would be able to report on certain things?
So, the caller is asking about how we report on some of the Trump statements that turn out to not be true.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's, first of all, covering Donald Trump is very exhausting. That's what I've heard from a lot of reporters, because it's kind of a constant churn. We never know when he's going to be tweeting something that could be as serious as accusing former president of wiretapping him. And those tend to, you know, that was a Saturday morning. And things can change very quickly. There's a lot of conflicting information sometimes that comes from even within the White House. But it is, I think, a challenge for some reporters to try to stay balanced in all of it. You just get a lot of crazy accusations sometimes flying around, and you have to keep a calm head. Sometimes reporters might find themselves wanting to call out what they might think is a lie or something like that. And there's been a huge debate over whether to use the word lie. We've seen newspaper editors have to kind of explain to their newsrooms how they approach using such a loaded term and how they approach describing such a thing, which is a really unique position to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can speak to the issue more generally, not in terms of sort of what people are actually doing in that press room, but, you know, we always urge, you know, reporters, journalists to be, you know, to be fair, to be, to pursue the truth. And, you know, it's not unprecedented, at least here in Wisconsin, for some members of the press corps to be sort of shunned or to be put in the back of the line when it comes to getting information. And it's one of the sort of hazards of the job when, you know, you're doing the job that you think you should
right.
be doing.
Right. Maybe we need to get real basic here, Mark. Why is it important to have a free press? What's the role of the press in American democracy?
Sure. You know, I always say, you know, the easiest questions are often the hardest to answer, right? Well, you know, I guess the question is, do you want the information that you learn about how your government works to come just from government or to come from an independent source that is working on your behalf, assessing how government works? I think the answer is, you know, you want that independent source. So, you know, the First Amendment was created so that, you know, there would be a free press, you could have freedom of expression and freedom of religion, the Founding Fathers found that it was, you know, very important for, you know, to have this independent voice. And I think it has been a critical underpinning of democracy for, you know, 200-some years. You know, you had mentioned Rex Tillerson taking somebody from, you know, IRJ or IJR to China. And if I'm recalling this correctly, you know, I thought this was an interesting tweet from Katie Turr, who covers the administration from NBC. You know, if you are talking to the Chinese, don't you think it would be an important symbol to have a free and independent press corps following your trip to Asia to send a signal? I think the fact that we've got an independent press that can report on government really is an underpinning of our democracy.
And you want to know what's going on, particularly what's happening with North Korea at this point in time. To just have one reporter with you who's not giving access to the pool of reporters about what they're discovering. That's a little frightening, isn't it?
It is. It is frightening to have that happen, because there was actually even an incident where, just this past on this trip with Rex Tillerson, where South Korean diplomats had told South Korean news agency that Tillerson had skipped some sort of dinner because of quote unquote fatigue, and that ricocheted around, and there was no pool report with him who would have been able to immediately confirm that. And there were reporters who were there, and they actually, one of them actually tweeted out a picture of Tillerson's convoy to prove that he at least was still in the country. But Tillerson then later disputed the notion that it was out of fatigue that he didn't go to dinner. He said that they actually just never invited him. And that goes to show you some of the pitfalls of not having press with you, or at least the a differing point of view. And often the media has been used, as you were saying earlier, as a symbol to other governments. There have been plenty of stories, actually, where abroad, for example, a Chinese government didn't want a press corps in some event to go into a meeting that was supposed to be open press. And I think it was Robert Gibbs or somebody in the Obama administration physically blocked the door from being closed. And kept it open. And if you want a symbol of First Amendment and free press in a country that doesn't necessarily adhere to it as much as the United States does, that it was a literal symbol of the White House press secretary holding the door open so that the U.S. media could go in and see this meeting. And so there's a fear that that's not going to happen with this Secretary of State. And so then if we are going to try and lecture other countries on certain freedoms, but then the Secretary of State doesn't necessarily even adhere to them when he is traveling, that could be a big problem in public diplomacy going forward.
And this, I think this discussion is, you know, perfectly, you know, proving the point and answering the question that Kathleen asked even better than I did. You know, I hadn't given a whit of thought over the last couple of days to what's going on in Asia with Rex Tillerson. But, you know, and it's because I haven't been reading anything about it. And if, you know, maybe had there been more reporting and more news coming out on what's happening during this visit, you know, I could have formed some ideas and thoughts about, you know, how well the visit's going, whether they're doing things right or wrong, et cetera.
Well, and it's such an important issue right now. You don't want it to not be noticed.
Sure.
Right. And it's not to say that there weren't reporters there. There were reporters there. They just traveled by themselves. They weren't able. So when any president or a cabinet official travels, they travel in what's called a quote-unquote bubble, and that's really the security zone. And so, for example, the president, when he travels with the press pool, which is a group of reporters charged with, and they rotate through and they follow the president around, they are within the security zone. And so they have access. Oftentimes, the president or the secretary, whoever's traveling, will talk to the reporters on the plane, on the long rides over there. And it's a really important moment for the reporters to get to understand what's happening with the secretary, to kind of get to understand where they're coming from. Hillary Clinton, who was, for example, famously wary of the media, was known to actually have a good relationship with her State Department press corps, because the State Department press corps is known to be a lot of very experienced journalists. They do not do a lot of the palace intrigue stories that, for example, the White House reporters are known to do. Mm-hmm. They're very steeped in policy. So secretaries of state tended to have a better relationship with them than, for example, the president might have the White House press corps, partly because of that, because they knew that when they were going to go back there and talk to these reporters, they were going to be having some very serious policy discussions. And so it was a big break in kind of this state institution of the State Department press corps to not be included on a trip, and then to have the extra kind of, for them, it was a slap in the face to have a reporter hand-picked to go, and a reporter who doesn't even cover the State Department. She covers the White House, and she's from an organization that's actually owned by Republican consultants, which is known for publishing pretty pro-Republican, pro-Trump articles.
You mentioned Clinton. It didn't do her any good to shun the press. She was a little more open as the campaign went on, but she seemed to go out of her way. You have one candidate who was berating the press and the other candidate who didn't really want to have much to do with the press.
Right, and it's always a difficult dance and balance for politicians into how much access you give, because obviously you don't want, as a politician, to have reporters know absolutely everything about you at all times. And so, I mean, I it would be a very tough position to be in on their part to really find that perfect balance.
Mm-hmm. Sam, thanks for your call. Let's go to Ronald in Abrams. Hi, Ronald.
Yes, I had a question, a couple questions. I understand it was reported yesterday that Donald Trump threatened in the backdoor meeting that he was threatening the opposite party that they would lose their job if they did not vote for his health care bill.
He was threatening people in his party, the Republican Party, that they would lose in the midterms. I don't know what he was suggesting. He would campaign against them or what. Do we have that story? Was that reported on pretty fully? How does a story like that come about? Mark Hottis?
I can tell you it was in our paper this morning, and I think it was in my Wall Street Journal this morning when I read it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so how those come out, those are...
Yeah, do you want to know how that came out, Ronald, or what's the press-related question here?
Well, my question is that constitutional for him to threaten the other side about not voting for what he wants?
Does it have to be a part of the story, whether or not that's constitutional?
Let's be clear, I don't think he was... He was basically... talking to members of his own party, not Democrats.
Right. No, correct? Not the Democrats. It was Republicans.
You know, so what did he mean by you'll lose your jobs? I mean, you know, the president can't fire members of Congress. But if he was trying to strong-arm them, you know, it sounds like something that people in politics do. They try and put pressure on their colleagues, their, you know, members of their own party to vote in a way that's favorable to them.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to, thanks, Ronald, for the call. Listener Tom writes, I think the best way for the press to survive is by constantly focusing on telling the truth about this administration. They're doing their best to deflect criticism, to intimidate, and to lead reporters down blind alleys and rabbit holes. Focusing on real truths, such as how President Trump falsely accused a previous president of illegal activity, is what is needed. Mark?
Well, I think the press is, you know, is doing those things. I think certainly... you know, I mean, it's what we would do with any administration, right? But the Trump administration, I think, has given everybody a lot to write about, and I think the media, frankly, is trying to capitalize on it. You've seen subscriptions to numerous publications go up quite a bit in the last two or three months, in part because people are hungry for information, and they're starting to finally realize that perhaps despite their previous criticisms and frustrations with some members of the media, that it's the people that are doing this job day in, day out, whether they're with a website or a newspaper or a radio or TV station, that they're the ones that are credible and worth paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend a little bit of time on Sean Spicer, who has been satirized on Saturday Night Live. I can't remember too many other press secretaries who've had such a prominent role on that television program. Let's listen to a little bit of what Sean Spicer said concerning Paul Manafort having, well, you'll hear what he said about his role in the Trump campaign, and you'll also get a little bit of his interaction with reporters. This is Sean Spicer. We'll talk about the press briefings as we carry on here.
There's been this discussion of Paul Manafort, who played a very limited role for a very limited amount of time. But beyond...
But are you the chairman?
Hey, Jonathan, hold on. Can you stop interrupting other people's questions?
He was saying that he didn't have a very limited role. What about the way that these press conferences are handled? Somebody has written, and let's go to you first on this, Hadass, that Sean Spicer's audience is an audience of one, really, and that's Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I think that's true to an extent. I think it's been pointed out that that Donald Trump tends to watch these briefings. Sean Spicer is Donald Trump's most prominent spokesperson, and it's a very difficult job because Trump himself likes to be his own spokesperson and is often his best own spokesperson. And the briefings have been very combative. They are taken live now on cable news, which is not normally what happens. I mean, there's always video cameras there. They're always being taped, and sometimes they get cut into. But now they've become like daily events that are covered live on all the cable channels, which is unusual. And it has become a bit of a show. And sometimes it's been pointed out by reporters that it's not really necessary for them to get that contentious. But they always kind of just get there's always kind of an automatic defensive posture. There's always this tension in the room. And I've heard from reporters there that, for example, when the OMB director goes on, or when the Health and Human Services Secretary goes up and they answer questions, the feeling between the reporters and the person taking the questions is much different than when Sean Spicer is up there. But Sean Spicer has always sort of been known to be a bit of a combative personality. I do wonder how long it will last. And like I said, sometimes it seems as though it's just for the cameras, because off cameras, you know, he answers questions.
Really?
He's helpful to people.
Really?
Yeah, and so there is sometimes a wonder, and like you said, an audience of one, to be this kind of defensive, tough person in these questions. But then once the cameras turn off, he doesn't always answer all of our questions, but, you know, Politico has been maligned by the press secretary and by the president, and still they're still talking to us.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting that you say that they become a daily event now. Is it because it's a bit of a show that we're anticipating, and then isn't the press to blame for airing these every day?
Yeah, I mean, it has become a bit of a show because of kind of that tense nature. I think the reporters would argue that they're just asking questions, and sure, their questions might be tough. And there were moments in other administrations where the interactions would get tense between the press secretary and the reporters, and a lot of times those would kind of make their way to the cable networks. But now I think there's this anticipation of really this like moment, and also a lot of the questions being asked in these briefings are very tough questions, such as these allegations of wiretapping.
Yes.
Because if Donald Trump isn't doing, for example, a press conference every day, that's the way that we can get the answer from the administration live on air are those press briefings. And clearly, the cable networks, who are a for-profit business, they need to make money, which means they need to have viewers, will be taking them live because that means that they've seen that people are watching and that the ratings are up. And there was a report somewhere a few weeks ago that Sean Spicer's press briefings were outrating the soap operas that air.
You really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's absolutely wild. Let's go to Tim, north of Madison. Hello.
Hi there. I have a comment, I guess, for Mark. He has remarked a number of times about reporting the news with an unbiased perspective. And I think that's really where the mainstream media needs to point the finger at themselves. I don't think there's been a lot of unbiased reporting right from the get-go. I can't help but think that if the tables were turned, for instance, on the health care issue, and a Democratic administration would be replacing a Republican health care plan, it would probably be framed in the context that they were reforming the health care instead of dismantling. And I just think that they just kind of getting what they deserve, and I wished they could be more objective, both Trump, and I wish that the mainstream media could be more objective. But other than the Wall Street Journal, there appears to be a lot of slanted and biased reporting in store.
Mark, we'll give that one to you.
Right. Well, I think those of us in the mainstream media aren't biased. I think we are trying to be fair. I think we are fair. As a note, you know, our newspaper doesn't use the word reform. We try not to use the word reform because that does carry a sort of value judgment. You're replacing something bad with something good. I think there's been, you know, a criticism, you know, for a long time by conservatives that, you know, the mainstream media doesn't, you know, have a liberal bias. I guess I would sort of reject it to a point. You know, I do think that in general, people in journalism do it to sort of, in some cases, not just report on what's happening in their communities, but to expose things, you know, injustice or problems. You know, to the degree that that's, say, liberal compared to, you know, going into banking and making a lot of money as conservative, I suppose we would cop to that. I don't think there's, you know, when it comes to sort of reporting on sort of politics and policy, that there is, you know, a lot of this actual bias that people complain of. But I guess I can understand, you know, when people complain about it.
We're talking about the current administration's relationship with the press and how the press is covering an administration that is not always truthful and has a tendency, at least Donald Trump does, to pick up bits of information which he then tweets about, which simply are not true. And he's created problems for himself when it came to wiretapping, when it came to a number of issues. The Swedish government saying there had been a terrorist attack the day before. He tweeted about it in terms of the British intelligence service wiretapping him as well. So we're looking at his tweets, how he gets his information and how he disseminates information and how the press covers all of this. We have two guests with us. Hadas Gold is political media reporter. Mark Pitch is assistant city editor at the Wisconsin State Journal and president of the Madison chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. We'll have time for a few more phone calls. If you can't get on the air because we plumb run out of time, then why don't you just go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and leave your messages there, and we'll all read them. This is the Ideas Network. Jake in Madison, our next caller. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Kathleen. Great show. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jake.
So I guess my comment would be, as far as the press, the media, and the news is concerned, is, you know, if Trump supporters and Democrats seem to be living on two completely different planets when it comes to where they get their news. So I think, you know, the general media, CNN, the standard media outlets can report all they want, but I just feel like it's going to fall on deaf ears on the right, because they're going to still continue to get their news from Rush and Fox News. And occasionally I'll listen to Rush Limbaugh just to make myself angry. And it's just so interesting to not hear them back down or discredit anything that he says. They just go right along with it. I just wonder, is that concerning to anybody? Is this going to be a trend that they see keep on going?
I think you're absolutely right. It's two different universes when it comes to consumption of news. Hadas, you want to respond first?
Sure. So there's actually been some studies about this, about where they get their news from. And what they found was that liberals, or those people who self-identified as liberal, tend to get their news sources from a wider variety of places, not necessarily from, you know, across the spectrum, but from just more places. So they'll say, oh, I listen to NPR, and I read the New York Times, and I watch CNN, and I do this, and I do that. And on the right, it tends to be more focused on a few outlets. And I think that that's part of it. I definitely believe that now you can kind of create these echo chambers where you can self-select. There's a great resource on Wall Street Journal. They've created something called Red Feed, Blue Feed, where if you they've kind of created these sort of fake feeds for what it might look like if you were on Facebook and you followed if you were of a conservative mind and you followed all these conservative websites and conservative figures and things like that, and the same for the liberals. And it really is like looking in two different worlds. I think that a lot of people, though, still do go to the CNNs and whatnot, but I think that just people have very also just different interpretations. They'll watch the same thing in the same way that the caller was getting angry listening to Rush Limbaugh. They'll watch CNN or MSNBC and get very angry at how they're portraying things. Because people will, I mean, we've even heard this from the White House now, that there are alternative facts and that there are different ways of looking at things. And now we've got where two different people can be looking at the same set of information and interpret it in very different ways. And this has been heading this way for quite a while. I think a lot of people tend to think of the golden days of the Walter Cronkites when we only had three television channels and you know, main newspapers, and that was it. But if you go back further in history, having different segments of the news industry come from different sort of biases has been around for a while and has happened for a while and used to be sponsored by different people who had clear leanings. It is difficult, though, now, because I think one of the biggest issues that we have now is we have outlets who on both sides of the aisle who claim to have straight news coverage and then also opinionated programming, for example, in the evening with commentators.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that it's the same banner on the bottom. It doesn't say, it doesn't have a big warning flag that says this
right.
is opinion. And we've seen
right.
that issue.
Mark.
Yeah, I would agree that there is this potential for, you know, the kind of work that's being done in Washington and what I would call trusted, respected news sources might fall on deaf ears. I guess I just think we have to keep doing it. I do endorse the idea of reading a wide range of publications and
yes.
listening to a wide range of news sources, both on radio and television. I don't have cable, but I generally consume a lot myself, and I find it very helpful. I'm encouraged by some of the early projects.
Almost out of time.
Yeah, to try and combat fake news, particularly curriculum for middle and high school students.
Hmm. I'll have to do and show them that. Thank you both very much. Interesting hour. Thanks, Mark. Mark Pitch, Assistant City Editor at the Wisconsin State Journal, Hadass Gold, Politico Media Reporter. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Marika Suval for producing this interesting hour and to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We'll be with you again tomorrow, same time, 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening.